Good afternoon and hello, friends. Welcome to another production of The Grace Hour. My name is Pastor Ronaldo Brown, and today I'm in studio with Pastor Matt Garrett. And for those of you who are new to the program, we are a show that discusses and explores various principles of our faith in a productive and meaningful way. And this week, we've been talking about dysfunctionalism in the family, the dysfunctional family. You've kind of watched over the last almost half a century, the breaking down of the family unit, the dysfunctionality of the family. You've seen how traditional roles have been challenged and replaced and changed. And what exactly defines a family is really, really up to question in our culture and in our society. But what one thing we can identify with is that they don't function as a family unit, as you would say traditionally, or the way the family grew up maybe 60 or 80 years ago. It's just a whole different, look. So we've been talking about that all this week. And today we're going to discuss a very, I would say, challenging attitude that's within today's families. Workaholism. Maybe that's a term you're not really familiar with. Workaholism, but we'll talk about that today. We'll make it very familiar. We'll say it like that. And of course, we're not doing this alone, Pastor Matt. We'd like you to join us. You can email questions@gracehour.org, or you can send us your comments and your questions to gracehour.org, of course.
Facebook Live, YouTube Live.
There you go. That's where you can send it.
Twitch, if you're on Twitch.
How many guys are on Twitch? That's a good question. But Apple, Google,
only the
Spotify?
Gamers.
Oh, the gamers, huh? Yeah, it makes sense. Maybe Stitcher.
Our producer is on Twitch.
Yeah, there you go. I'm twitching already thinking about it.
Oh, no.
But workaholism. You can also call us. We'd love to hear you call in. It'd be great to hear from you. 1-800-338-7060. Or locally at 410-483-3700. Call in, let us know about this. Maybe this is part of your life and you don't even know it. And that tends to happen. Someone puts a label on something that's in our life and we don't even aware that that's actually in our life. Mm-hmm. And you're addressing it. So we'd love to hear from you about that today. Pastor Matt.
What's up?
Since 1971, the term workaholic has existed. This is not a new term. It's been around for a long, long time.
And what is that?
Well,
50 years?
That's pretty much 50 years.
Going on 53?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's basically, and the definition has morphed over the time. Even right now, they've even kind of diagnosed it as a psychological mental health profile, believe it or not. But it's basically someone who compulsively works hard in long hours. Mm. Now, let me spread that out a little bit.
Sure.
There's a difference between a workaholic and someone who works hard.
Definitely.
And here is the difference, variation. Someone who works hard, they have the ability to work hard for something and then bring it back down.
And drop it.
And then pick it back up for something else. Yeah. So there's that variation. But a workaholic never comes down. They manufacture ways to be driven. They continue to push and push and push and push.
Like,
and
what's next? What's next? What's next?
Yeah, and there's no break. There's no stop. There's no measurement. There's no value system in it. It's just producing. Mm-hmm. So I've got something here for you. This is going to be fun.
I'm excited for this.
I got a workaholic test. You ready?
Yes, I'm ready. Is there like a scale?
On a scale of 1 to 7. You ready?
1 to 7. Yeah, all right.
Are you always in a hurry?
No. Okay. Sorry. 1 to 7. Yep. 3.
Okay. Is your to-do list unrealistically long, like more than 10?
I think if I wrote it down, it would be, but that's why I avoid writing it down. So I'm going to say 4.5.
Like a 5.
All right. 5.
You're being charitable. Do you use days off to catch up on unfinished work?
Oh no. 5.
Okay, 5.
Yeah.
Has more than one person told you to slow down?
No, 2.
Oh wow. Okay, not bad. Do you feel guilty when you relax?
Absolutely not. Oh my gosh. I'm always looking to relax.
Okay, but let's
no,
go.
That's a one.
Maybe a -5?
That's a -5.
Okay. Do you check your phone at night and the first thing in the morning?
7.
Okay, there we go.
100%. That's a product of my generation.
There you go. That could be just the usage. Okay, I'll go.
I'm just
that.
Giving excuses. I don't want to be labeled. I don't want to be labeled by the end of this. Okay.
I heard Gray Sauer and Pastor Matt Garrett. He's a workaholic.
Oh no,
he's a workaholic.
I resign.
Do you get sick to take? Do you have to get sick to take time off?
No. Three.
Yeah. Okay, that's not bad. I mean, a workaholic score is usually around 25, and you're at 10, 26.
What? A workaholic is, how many questions were there?
Seven.
Seven times seven is 49.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me a workaholic is anything above
25. But with
I disagree. Where did you get this?
With skewing your number
test?
is the internet usage at the phone usage at seven.
But that's the only one that was high. I had two fives, right?
Maybe you had two fives. You had two
seven,
threes.
12, 17, 20, 23.
Yeah, I mean the two threes, the seven, and the two fives.
I think this test wants me to feel like I have something wrong with me when I don't.
Welcome to America.
Thank you. Yeah, that's true. That's what the... Oh, I'm not going to say it. Never mind.
Let me give this to you.
That'd be too controversial.
You're never controversial.
Never.
You know you're a workaholic when all your Christmas cards come from business associates.
Okay.
You know you're a workaholic when you head out to back to school night and you're not sure which one of your kids to go to. You know you're a workaholic when your family refers to you as occupant.
Oh, no.
You know you're a workaholic when you unwind immediately after work by watching the news.
No. Mm-mm.
You know you're a workaholic when you take work-related materials to the bathroom with you.
No.
Ding, you're not a workaholic. Come on now.
Okay, if we're going by that, I'm nowhere close. If we're going by that skewed test.
And it's skewed because I didn't do well. Yes. But really, it's this thing of most jobs that we do, and I think in this condition could actually happen in the church.
Sure.
I could be a Christian, I could be in the church, and I could have a life that's workaholic oriented, and the direct recipient or victim of that workaholism would be my family, which gets back to our theme.
Yeah. Well, and you said this just a few minutes ago, like there's a difference between working hard mm-hmm. and workaholism.
Yeah.
But it's a short distance. It's like you have to be careful that your working hard doesn't turn into an obsession or a something that you're always always looking towards, you know?
Well, it's interesting we're talking about this as Christians because ministry can attract workaholics.
For sure.
Because anyone who finds worth in their work and can't walk away from it, ministry is a great place to justify that because you can say, well, I'm doing this all for God.
I'm
doing
serving
this.
People.
Yeah. So, yeah. And even if you're in the church, you can say, well, you know, I'm applying church principles to my practical life and I'm working hard in devotion to my career and my job. And it can become an idol.
For sure. 100%.
And maybe that's what's fueling that, really, the idolism.
Yeah. Idolatry is just like one of the biggest topics that you see throughout the whole Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple things you have to consider whenever you're thinking about this word. So yeah, maybe this word is new to you, workaholism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, alcoholism, workaholism, alcoholic, workaholic. Same idea. You're just constantly consuming that substance. So is work a substance? No, but it's a mode.
Sure.
Or it's, yeah. So a couple things you need to consider is when it comes to idolatry, what is your underlying motive for needing to work so much?
Okay.
One of the biggest motives that we find in society today is money.
Okay.
Always, always. Well, I gotta, you know, and it'll start genuinely. It'll start with the right intentions. Oh, I have to provide for my family.
Yep, reasonable.
I need to make sure we're in a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
I need to make sure that we are up to date with the times. You know, you can justify it a million and one ways, but verse in the Bible that is like a warning for us from Paul written to Timothy.
Mm-hmm.
Is it 1 Timothy 6? I believe it's 1 Timothy 6.
I think I know where you're going. Yep.
And it says verse 10. Yeah, 1 Timothy 6:10. For the love of money is the root. People will correct this. It says the root of all evil in the King James. A better translation is the root of many kinds of evil.
Okay.
For the love of money is the root of many kinds of evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Like, you got to think about that for a second. Okay.
Sure.
okay, maybe my motive started out well, mm-hmm. but has my desire turned into, okay, how can I gather more and more money? How can I, you know, and then what do you do with that money when you get it? Then we start to go into areas of stewardship. We start to go into areas again of idolatry and what we're actually focusing on. When I think of the word idolatry, I think, what am I looking at? Hmm. Like, what am I looking at Christ? Am I fixing my eyes on Christ? Hebrews chapter 12.
Right.
Or am I looking at whatever that thing is in front of me?
Mm.
Whatever that goal is. Why am I working? What's the goal behind it?
Okay.
Is it the paycheck? Is it the bonus? Is it the commission? You know, like what's behind that?
What it seems like, what you're saying is like, okay, I need to check my motive. But often, let's just say, because in the beginning, the motive is pure. The motive is, let me correct myself, it's not necessarily pure. The motive is good. Morally good. Yeah. I should be responsible.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have a good goal, what I'm saying is that, okay, the end of that goal is good. So the ends do justify the means in a moral way. Or you could say the ends justify the means, but at some point the means become the end. I begin to pursue the money. And then you ask yourself this question. One day you look back and say, how much is enough?
Exactly.
And that's an interesting subjective thought, because a lot of people say, well, how much should I save? Mm-hmm. How much should I have? Mm-hmm. And there's always going to be a need. That's the funny thing about money. There's always going to be a need. You're going to always think of what you could have, what you could do, what it could do. It's a tool.
Yeah.
It's a great tool.
Yeah.
It's a lousy master, but it's a great servant.
Yes.
It's a great tool. So the question is, if that is fueling, and oftentimes when, you know, you get married, right? You have kids, you acquire assets. These assets require money to maintain a house, a car. You think about education. You think about your kids. You think about having a life.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with wanting a good life. And you're working for that. And that goal is in front of you. But I like what you said. The goal, all those things are goals that are in front of me. But if Christ is not in front of my goals,
right,
then the goals become Christ.
Yeah, and that's the definition of an idol.
Wow.
And like you can read in Psalm 115, you can read in Isaiah, where it talks about the characteristics of an idol.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have Jesus right here, maybe off to the left a little bit based on whatever you're looking at right now. And you can see Jesus is a living person. He came, he died, he had hunger, he had thirst, he had all the things that humans, he was human, fully human, fully God. But then you look at this idol, it has none of those characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
It you know, it has ears but does not hear, it has eyes but does not see. And it's just like, you know, the president's on the dead president's on the different dollar bills, like eyes but they don't see. Like,
beautiful.
What are we really hoping to get out of that? I want the relationship with my creator, my savior, rather than the temporary, big word, temporary benefit of whatever that idol has to offer.
But if you see God as a resource, then you go to him as a resource.
Yeah, that can be troublesome too.
Because here's what happens. Then anything that's a resource can become a God.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like when you change your image of how you see God, it opens the door for other images to become God.
For sure. Yeah.
It's interesting thing. And I think sometimes in ministry, when your life is all work, or as a Christian, if your life is all work because you have these goals, your life can be sad. I kind of made an acronym out of that. Your life can be stressed, anxious, and depressed.
For sure.
And a lot of the time, a lot of us in the church can be stressed and anxious and depressed about our work life because we have the wrong motivation, and we're staring at the means, and we're not seeing the end through God's eyes.
Now let me take that acronym and flip it a little bit. I'm going to keep the acronym the same. So stressed, anxious, depressed.
Yes.
Now instead of your motives being incorrect, maybe actually your workaholism is a form of sublimation in your life. Sublimation is like a fancy way of saying distraction, or to say to take your mind or your focus off of more important things. So a lot of times you'll see someone who is a workaholic because they're stressed, anxious, or depressed about their home life.
Okay.
They're having problems at home.
I see.
And so, or let's say they're having problems with, you know, their family, whether they're in a nuclear family or whether they have their own family, whatever it may be, they're having problems at home. So they use work as their distraction.
Well, interesting.
So it could go both ways.
Yep.
The work could create the stress, the anxiety, the depression, or it could be somehow an escape for that person from the stress, anxiety, and depression. What do you think?
I think it's a great thought. I think that's what's happening a lot in the family unit.
Yeah.
And I think because of the dysfunctionality of other issues in the family, mm-hmm. work is the place where you escape. And here's some characteristics that could say that you're escaping a bad home life mm-hmm. by hiding in work. When you find yourself getting off of work but not getting out of your car. I spoke to a guy.
He said,
okay, Pastor, I get off at 5. I'm not going in the house till 6:30 mm-hmm. because I'm going out, or I'm going to stay late. I'm going to work harder because when I go home, there's no peace. So I find peace in being busy. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of another family where the wife, she says, well, I know what I'm going to find when I get home. So I don't mind traveling. I don't mind whatever you need me to do. I'll do. Just don't make me go home. Mm-hmm. So it's like there's issues that I'm not going to deal with. At home, I'm not going to face at home because home is not a place of peace. It's a place of confrontation. So I'm going to hide, like you said, sublimate by going something. And it's for the greater good, right? Oh, yeah, I'm out here making money. I'm doing mm-hmm. this thing. Meanwhile, I'm doing it for the family, and yet I don't want to be with the family.
No, it's selfish. Yeah, wow. Right.
But the person doing that, they don't see that as selfish. They see that as protective.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You know, or insulating themselves somehow.
Or rationalizing,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So a lot of that fueling that workaholism, there's a lot of fuels to it. You said like it could be, and these are not bad goals. The first one is not a bad goal. Like, okay, I want to provide for my family, mm-hmm. but I don't want to provide for my family beyond the provision of what God has for me. And then number two, I also don't want to hide from my family.
Yeah.
In the provision of work that God has provided for me.
I think a lot of this goes back to how we each individually relate to God.
Okay.
James 1:17, every good and perfect gift. Like if we think of God as our provider, mm-hmm. not a resource, but our provider, it's slightly different. James 1:17, he provides every good and perfect gift, comes from above, from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variableness or shadow of turning.
That's right.
Like, he's providing for mm-hmm. the home. He's providing for our spiritual life. He's providing the grace that we need to go on, the mercy each morning to wake up and take on a day. He's providing those things. If we start to take that upon ourselves, oh, I got to become the provider. My wife needs to become the provider. We need to do everything in our power to make sure that everything's being provided for. Then that's the same thing as idolatry. That's the same thing as taking away our relationship with God, our reliance upon him, mm-hmm. and putting all of the weight on ourselves. Hmm. So I think there's like, if your relationship with God is not one of fellowship mm-hmm. and receiving from him, then you're going to start striving yourself to fill the void of what you should be receiving from God. And you just make it on your own. I'm thinking like the servant of the Lord must not strive.
Yes.
2 Timothy 2.
24. Beautiful verse. Love that verse. But it says he must be patient. Isn't it interesting? The first thing is patient.
Yeah.
It doesn't say he must be ready to go. No, he's patient and then he's ready to go. You can reach us. We'd love to hear your questions and comments. You can follow the feed there on YouTube and Grace Up and Facebook. On Facebook, you can reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you and restream. And you can also call in again mm-hmm. internationally at 1-800-338-7060 and locally at 410-483-3700. We'd love to hear from you about this topic. It's a very interesting one. And I think it kind of ambushes the Christian. I think it ambushes the Christian because you can take that word holy and you can stamp that on that kind of behavior and say, oh my goodness, they're such a servant of God. And are they? Mm-hmm. What is underneath of that? What is underneath of that? I wrote down four reasons why pastors struggle with the balance of this. Mm-hmm. The first one is, or Christian service, and you could even expand this to say people that work full-time in ministry.
Yeah.
The first one is the always-on phenomenon, where you know, you expect it because it's the work of God to be on call 24 hours a day,
my
7 days a week.
My phone needs to be next to me every second of every day.
Social media and the internet has exacerbated this, and people have now, what's happened with social media is it's raised people's expectations for response. Like, instantaneously through Twitter, Facebook, text, you need to be responding to me. How come you didn't respond to me? I just texted you. I just called you. It's defining what, and then at some point you're to define work is problematic because you don't know where the off button is. Another one is you're the jack of all trades expectation.
Okay.
You know, the call to ministry is diverse. You're a preacher one minute, you're a counselor the other minute, you're a plumber the other minute. And then any given week, somebody's upset with you because you haven't met their expectations. And then you reinterpret that to mean I didn't correctly allocate my hours so that I could be all things to all men.
Yeah.
But you can't take that verse from Paul and say, I'm all things
absolutely
to all men
not.
That I might win some. I can be some things to some men that I might win some. But I can't be all things to all men that I might win some.
No, and we are not meant to be all members of the body. We are a member in particular who has specific gifts, who has specific purpose within the body. And when people start to pull you all different directions to say, well, what about this? What about that? I need this. I need that. It's like, hold on a sec. That's not what I'm here for. Let me help you find someone who's here for that. But that can't be me.
Pastor Matt, this is ministry. And in ministry, that answer is abnormal.
Oh, I mean, I don't think people like it so much if say it that way.
You're definitely pulling out the sandpaper.
What does it say? The wounds of a friend are better than the kisses of an enemy.
Okay.
Something like that.
We got a lot of more wounds than kisses with that statement.
Speaking the truth in love.
There it is.
There's a lot of love in that, I promise.
Oh, amen.
I hope.
Here's another one. No week is typical. Like, okay, today's a typical day for me. I'm running around putting out fires and, you know, you're in the ministry. In ministry, you see the best of people and you see the worst of people, but you rarely see people normal. You just see the best and the worst. And every week is different. The hours are unmeasured and you stamp the word holy on it. So that justifies, manic behavior. Here's another one. The blurry line between ministry and life. In one respect, we walk with God and that is our life.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've got to be careful that there's not a delineation. This is where families can be dysfunctional, even in the church, is when the line between ministry and family life is blurred. Where you find that time with your family is time in the ministry, and time in the ministry is time in your family, and the only time you spend time with your family is in the ministry.
No.
Again, these are the challenges of striking a balance.
I believe it, and I see it, and I've talked to young and older pastors who are like, "Hey, I'm always available," and I'm just like, "Really? Like, are you sure that's the statement you want to make? Like, you're always available?" I appreciate the heart behind that.
Yeah,
but let's face the reality: you're a human. I'm a human. Let's take brain breaks. Even let's take ministry breaks. Let's take a step back so that we can be filled by God and that we even have any power to minister. If we're ministering, go, like this is a workaholic pastor or minister, however you want to think about it. If we're go, we're never being filled.
Interesting.
We are never being filled. And then whenever we're all out of juice, then what are we going with? We're going with our own strength.
Yes.
And what does Christ say to us? Matthew 11:28. Like, where are we supposed to go at all times? Come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden. I will give you rest. But if we're just go, we don't have a second, like we're on the highway, we're going down 95. You got to go to a rest stop if you want to get more fuel. Like, you don't have any other option. So what are you going to do? Go until the car runs out of gas and just leave it in the, you know,
we all have
leave
stories.
It on 95.
We always have those stories in ministry of, I was running. I forgot to put gas in my car. And that's a joke.
Yeah.
That's real. But at the same time,
that's a picture.
It's a picture. But is my life running like that? And that's why I think in the church, as a Christian, it's very easy to stamp God on working hard. Like, he's working hard for God. But you know what? I don't want to work hard for God. I want to work with God.
Yeah.
And then that in and of itself will set my schedule. There'll be mm-hmm. peaks, there'll be valleys, there'll be times of rushing mm-hmm. where my life is like a raging stream.
Yeah.
And there'll be times when my life is like a well where I can just sit and I can ruminate with God. And then those times, God gives me those times. The same God that gives me the capacity to run gives yeah. me the capacity to sit.
And wait on him. Yeah. Both ways
yes.
are of God. Like, let's dispel that rumor. Work is not a bad thing.
Let's stay with that. Work is not a curse.
Yes.
But when you read in Genesis, in the very beginning, Genesis 1:28, Genesis 2:5, mm-hmm. and even Genesis 3:16 through 19, mm-hmm. when you read about work, work is part of the blessing. It's not part of the curse.
Right.
God gave work in, before there was ever a curse. But then at the curse in Genesis 3, 16 through 19, the ground was cursed, the man was cursed, the woman was cursed, the servant was cursed. Work itself was not cursed. Work yeah. is actually a blessed activity. God gave it to him first to do. He said, and Paul worked and labored in 2 Thessalonians 3:8, and Luke worked in Colossians 4:14.
And a workman is worth his hire.
There yeah. it is. Yeah. So work is not bad, but I think we struggle sometimes with seeing work as a blessing because we don't see work through the eyes of God.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I'm going to give you three statements here. It's very easy, even in the church, to connect work with worth.
Absolutely.
How I work is how valuable I am. But they're really two very separate things. But the challenge I think that happens is, number one, we see work that's tied to our identity.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the church, if you work for the church and you suddenly don't work for the church, all of a sudden it's like my identity has changed. Or I used to be on the mission field. Or I used to work in ministry, but I'm not working. All of a sudden my identity has changed.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Missionaries come home from the mission field.
Sure.
And then they're like, well, what do I do with my life? Like, I was doing something for God. I was out there every day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That transition can be jarring.
Yeah, because the change in, it's not just a change in geography. It's yeah. not just a change in culture if it's outside, but it's also a change in the means of which you do the work of God.
Mm-hmm.
So if when you do something so much, it becomes part of you. It's hard to change and still retain who you are.
Yeah.
But work can tie to my identity. Work can often be mistaken as our purpose.
Yes.
For instance, like, I'm here to do the work. No, you're here because you're walking with God. And whatever, that's the purpose. The overarching purpose is that I would know God and make him known. How that works out in a calling, how that works out, that's number two.
Yeah.
But imagine that you're walking in what you perceive as your calling, mm-hmm. but you don't know God and make him known, but you're just trying to find out what to do mm-hmm. instead of finding out your relationship with God.
One thing I often speak to my students about in the seminary is when you start to learn about the will of God,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of different misconceptions that people can teach about the will of God. And if we just stick strictly to the language and the context and the books that it's in, like Ephesians uses the word will of God multiple times.
Sure.
Chapter 1. Romans 12, the will of God, show me what is that good and perfect and acceptable will of God. And you look at the Greek word, it's telema.
Yeah.
And the two definitions, if you just read them like together, like as two it's to bless mankind through Jesus Christ. Mm. That's the literal definition of the will of God, to bless mankind through Jesus Christ. And me saying that is to say, like, is God not like a big God? Is he not like a humongous God? Is he not like so far, like what does Romans 11, 33 through 36 say? He's like way beyond yes. our understanding.
Sure.
Right? If he's big, then doesn't that mean the work of God could also be so beyond our understanding
mm.
that we could function in it in so many different ways?
Yes.
As long as we are blessing mankind through his son, Jesus Christ. Like, do we have Christ in us?
Mm-hmm.
Are we working in the kingdom or for the kingdom with other people who don't have Jesus Christ?
Mm-hmm.
Then we have an opportunity to be doing the work of God, whether it's you're out on the streets every day preaching the gospel to people, or you're over at the homeless kitchen, the soup kitchen, and you're serving people. Like, all of these are different ways to manifest the work of God.
Mm.
So why do we put such weight on certain aspects of it when it's really like so expansive and so beyond us.
But then might be back to what you said at the beginning of the program.
Sure.
That could be my motive.
Absolutely.
That could be my, some things are more visible.
Mm-hmm.
So more public.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in my world or in my peer group, certain things have more value for what I do for the kingdom. Or maybe in my own estimation, I see certain things as more valuable. And so when I do those things, I feel valuable. Or, and when I'm not doing those things, I'm not valuable.
Or people give more credit for certain things.
Sure.
Yeah.
And one of the things that happened in the house of God, the affirmation that happened, we say that's very holy and that's not as holy. That's very holy. You led 16 people to Christ. It's great. And you just change the trash cans in the back. I'm not so sure how holy that really can be. And you just start weighing things. You start evaluating things. Mm-hmm. You bring standards and measurements into the work of God, which is quite interesting. But then the third one I was going to say about it is the fruits of our work are often thought of as our legacy.
Mm-hmm.
People are chasing, what am I remembered for? That's my legacy. So my work is my identity because it reveals my legacy.
Mm-hmm.
But really, what you can't even control that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You can't control what people think of you, and you can't control what you leave behind. You really don't have a lot of say in that, actually.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't. You can and you can't, but it's very easy to get confused about who I am and marrying that thought to or answering that question by what I do.
Yep.
Very easy. And one of the ways I have to rehearse, I guess, whenever work I'm doing in my life, I have to reverse my identity. I am a child of God. And I would say it this way. What I do, in your mind, you have to say this to yourself. What I do is not who I am.
Right.
What I do is not what I'm meant to be. A lot of what you do may not be connected to what God has meant for you to be. It may not be. But be careful when you start saying, if I'm doing this, this is what I'm meant to be. We always love to say that I was born to do this. Not really. You were born to know God. You weren't born to do anything else but to know God.
We were born to glorify Him.
Yes. Yeah. That's why you are hardwired with faith, so that you could know God. And in knowing God, you would glorify God. So what I do is not what I'm meant to do. I'm meant to be necessarily. And what I do is changeable, but who I am is unchangeable.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to rehearse these thoughts so that if I rehearse these thoughts, my identity is not based on the work that I do, so that I don't get confused about who I am in work. And work is not a bad thing. It's just what I'm doing. Like you said, it's just my way of glorifying God. And it doesn't matter what I do. It's just what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to be careful. I get cemented to that. And all of a sudden, instead of me defining my work starts to define me.
Yeah. I like Philippe Siragi has said this. He said it many times in classes in front of other people, so I don't think he'll mind me sharing it here. He went through a part of his life where he got really sick.
Yep.
And he was over a Bible college in another country.
Mm-hmm.
And his sickness caused him to not be able to do anything for, like, I'd say around 6 months. And he said when he came back and he was better, he was fully recovered, this like life circumstance taught him that, like, exactly what we're saying here, like, he is not his work. Like, his work, the work of God continues with or without us.
Beautiful.
And so how many times do we think, like, oh, we're so pivotal to this idea? This might be driving workaholism in our lives. We're so pivotal to this project or this task that needs to be completed, or we're so pivotal to this vision being completed by this time that we can't take ourselves out of it. We have to always be on go mode for it.
Mm-hmm.
That if we just took a step back
and
realized, well, God is way bigger than that. God can do this with or without me. God, you look through the Old Testament, and every single time a man of God falls, another man of God rises to the occasion.
That's
and God
right.
always has a man or a woman in place, ready to go for what's next.
Beautiful.
Like, if we rely on God, it'll happen. If we step back and watch God, it'll happen. But He desires that we would participate and glorify Him in it.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful answer. I love that. Let me ask you a question, because you're now married. You have multiple kids now.
Uh-oh.
Have you ever, like, sensed this coming in, like this in your marriage or with your kids or in your home? Have you ever sensed getting there? Because it creeps in, it kind of ambushes you, because you do work for the church, you do serve God full time. So that's there. Do you ever sense that coming in?
Sense what exactly?
That sense of let me use a new word.
Yeah.
Balance. That I'm losing the balance. Good.
Yeah. For sure.
Okay.
So it's like,
how do you bring that back?
I think it's so quick too. I think it's like, you know, something happens at home and you just want to like, all right, I got to go. Like, and then you're going to work. But then, on the opposite end, something happened. I just want to go home, you know? And it becomes like you're retreating one way or the other.
Wow.
But the balance would be like working through whatever happened here, communicating, resolving, reconciling. And same thing at work. Okay, maybe this doesn't get solved today.
Okay.
This problem came up, but let me, you know, think about it, pray about it, ask God how to move forward with it. Yep. Instead of just retreating and running away. Workaholism, I feel like, is just an opportunity to run away.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you feel, when you sense you're getting there, and we can all sense we're getting there, what's the fix to get back when you know you're out of balance? Because, you know, when you get out of balance, your behavior in Proverbs 11:1 can be abominable to God. You can really get way out. And you it looks like this when you're out of balance. It looks like you're cranky.
Yeah.
You're moody. Don't talk to me. Yeah. Leave me alone.
I put my unavailable sign on my door and I shut that thing.
Diet Coke is all the way up in the cup and the office door is closed. Yeah. When you get cranky, when you get moody, you're snappy with people. Mm-hmm. You start pressing. You start feeling yourself emotionally involved.
Yeah.
In what you're doing to the point where you have emotional variances. You get really, really sad when things don't work out, and really, really angry when things aren't good, and really, really high when you accomplish something and maybe a false, overvalue it.
Yeah.
So how do you, when you see you getting yourself that way, I mean, I can give you the textbook answer, but in a practical way, how do you get back?
I think I got a couple answers for this. So the first and most important I would say is get alone with God.
Mm-hmm.
Get alone with God. You know what's happening.
Yeah, you can feel it. You're
like
a victim.
You feel it. You know, you start to like, you're just running on whatever emotion, whatever adrenaline is pushing you. You're like, okay, hold on. Let me get to a place where there's like low, I don't know what the word is, but you're just not being bothered by a bunch of things. Like you can just get quiet for a second. Mm-hmm. Because what we really need is objectivity in these moments. What we really need is objectivity. So opening our Bible, getting in a mode of prayer in some way, turning on some worship music and just shutting things out for just a few minutes to like recenter yourself. That's like one idea. The other idea is like go to whoever you're covering or your counsel is, because they're going to provide you with objectivity for your situation.
Beautiful.
You have to go outside of yourself, whether it's directly to God or whether it's to God's messengers who are over you to help you. Like you have to go somewhere that's going to be a place of objectivity. His word is always objective.
Okay.
But when we're reading it, it can very quickly become subjective. So we have to be careful that we're not in some weird state of mind whenever we open it up and be like, then we're justifying ourselves for whatever we're feeling or whatever's happening.
Yeah, that's where the holy stamp comes out. You just stamp holy on that. Like, you know what? It's not so bad. Yeah. I haven't been asleep in 3 days, but no, this could work. This could really work.
Yeah.
God did it.
Yeah.
But
how would you answer that question?
I would say, I like the getaway part. I've done that. Mm-hmm. I've stepped into a closet in a weird place and just said, okay, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Or the Spirit's been good to me in those times when I've gotten like that. I get like convicted. I've gone to the car. I've done things. I've gotten away. I love the idea of getting away to God. Getting away to God to fall up is how I see it. To get away to God and fall up. I also can be quiet. I try to get quiet because I realize what you're going to say, it's from a bad place. It's from a wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
Your words are everything. Then I also factor in the fact that oftentimes the victims of you getting like this is usually your inner circle. Outer circle, not so much. Your inner circle, they see it. They may even say something or they sense it and they realize, okay, you're there. You're at that place.
Yep.
Usually your spouse. So I usually get quiet and love on them. I just start loving. Mm-hmm. I don't evaluate. I just start loving. And whatever, if everything's on the floor, it stays on the floor. Whatever's wrong is wrong. I just lean in love. I lead with love. And then without trying to solve any issue, love is first.
Nice.
Kids, same thing. I think with your family needs the most, in a difficult situation because the family, all in a family unit right now in this day and age, almost every family operates dysfunctionally based on the definition of dysfunctional.
100%.
So,
because we're all dysfunctional human beings.
Yeah, I'm not trying to fix that.
yeah.
But because that's God's work. But what I am trying to do is not burn down relationships. Because here's what happens when a family has something like that happening. And in our day and age, sometimes it could be both parents. Mm-hmm. In fact, we can put that in our kids, and our kids get that mindset. And then you've got an entire house, everybody in the house is running, and it might be for different reasons. Some might be because of the escape from home, and some might be escaping from something that happened in the past, but work is the refuge. So, okay. Or what I do is the refuge, or I have an identity from the work. So I say when it's a family like that, it's a bit more tricky because that's when, as head of your family or in the family, you have to think about your covering. I like what you said second. I need the pastor involved. Mm-hmm. I need a covering involved to say, okay, help us out here. Help us in processing life with God as far as what's acceptable and what's out of bounds, out of balance.
Yeah.
So that's another one. I'd also say studying the doctrine of stewardship. Because workaholicism directly affects the currency of time. Mm-hmm. So stewardship can help me give the proper apportion of what is what and when is when.
Yeah.
And you end up going around apologizing a lot, to be honest with you. You burnt it all down to the ground.
Yeah.
You've driven a car over people. You're like, okay, I got to fix that. And you're not really apologizing because your apology is going to take away whatever you've done.
No, yeah.
But what you're saying is that, okay, I got it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to know I got it wrong and I want to make it right. It's reconciliation. And I think that's what happens. Cause when you get like that, you start breaking things down. And then this is your chance to build back up.
Mm-hmm.
Cause sometimes in our desire to build, we break.
Mm-hmm.
Cause we got, for the greater good, we're going to do this way. And you drove over 7 people. Sometimes we have this statement we say sometimes in the missions office is it's not so much how we get things done, but how we got there. More worried about how we got there.
Yeah.
If we got there right, it didn't work, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
But if we didn't get there right and we won, we didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't win Christ in Ephesians 4. We didn't win Christ. So those are my thoughts about that. The key word is balance.
Sure.
What can I do to guard my life against these things and guard my family against these things? And really, when you guard your life, you are guarding your family in some measure. As a member of your family, you can be a difference maker. Even in your marriage, you can be a difference maker in this area because this breaks down communication. This breaks down unity in the household. This brings a spirit of animosity and stress and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And it can take people's, what you said earlier, eyes off of God. Let me give you a few of these. Is number one, this kind of leads into what Pastor Matt was saying. I got to build my life around Christ. I don't make Christ the center of my life. I make Christ the priority of my life. I don't have the strength or the ability to put Christ in the center of my life.
Sure.
But I can prioritize Christ. And when I prioritize Christ, it will prioritize my time. It will prioritize everything else. Secondly, I have to accept the reality that I'm a human. I can only do so much in so much time. And in my, I do what I can as I'm led of God, but I do what I can.
Mm-hmm.
Need to limit my labor.
Yep. Set work hours.
Set
work hours for yourself.
In the French Revolution, the French canceled the Sabbath. They canceled a rest day. 7-day work week during the Revolution. And they had to stop it 3 years later because the overall health of the nation declined. Because there was no help, there was no Sabbath, there was no rest day. A day of rest means rest my body. It means reset, refocus. Here's another one: commit your schedule to God. Okay, I'm going to work 14 hours. How about you take that to God before you take that to your boss?
Mm-hmm.
Before you say, "Well, I got to work extra to get this extra money," but if you change because you worked those extra hours, was it worth it? I'd also say too. Learn to enjoy what you do and you won't have this ambition to do more. Find that in what you do already.
Contentment's
a beautiful thing. This has been a great program.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff to think about, a lot of stuff to unpack. Thank you so much for listening and tuning in. Hopefully you subscribe to us on Apple or Google or Spotify and Amazon Music, even Audible, and for you gamers, Stitcher.
Twitch.
Twitch and
Stitcher.
Okay.
Stitcher 2.
Stitcher. We're creating one called Stitcher. You can join us on services on Sunday at 9 and Sunday at 11 and 6:30 in the evening. And you can also get us on Wednesdays at 7 at 6025 Moravia Park Drive. This coming weekend, coming up next weekend, we have a men's conference here. Friday and Saturday, you can go to ggwo.org and look it up. We'd love to have you.
And Bible College starts Monday.
Bible College
Open
starts Monday.
Open house week 15th through the 19th. Come check out a class. 8
for free.
From 6 to 10.
This is your week.
Zit.